Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I am Cole Perry, your host and senior market analyst at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. And on this episode, we're excited to have another special guest interview, this time with Ed Pierzik from NAREIT. So Ed is currently Senior Vice President of Research at NAREIT. His primary responsibility is contributing to NAREIT's CRE and macroeconomic analysis. He also builds relationships with public, private, and academic orgs. So Omar, I'll turn it back to you to give some more background on our guest.
Thank you. First of all, Ed, very excited to have you here. I think we've interacted at a few events, but I've been a longtime fan of your work. And I'm hoping that we can give some of our listeners a little bit of background. So I know that after studying industrial engineering as an undergrad and then getting your master's in finance, you really began your career in commercial real estate. What drew you to the field of CRE?
Yeah, you know, it's actually pretty interesting with the story. It's not a typical path, but I would describe myself as a capable but not a passionate engineer. I knew I needed to do something else. I went over to the business school, ended up being a teaching assistant and research assistant for a couple of professors in the real estate program. And then really with that, it made me think I wanted to be a professor. I stayed on and then I ended up teaching a couple of summer courses that were all my own. But what I quickly realized was, one, I was just a few years older than most of the seniors in my class. They asked a lot of questions that I didn't have answers to. So I'd always be like, I'll get back to you. And ultimately, real estate's a practice. I really decided that I had to go out and get some experience. Initial thought, it would be a few years. Next thing I know, I had 20 years in the private equity real estate investment management business.
That's fantastic. And so you spent time over a decade at Henderson Global Investors and then at TIAA, both in portfolio management and investment strategy roles. But then you made a shift to San Diego State, where you served as the director of the Corky McMillan Center for Real Estate. Can you tell us a bit about that shift and what you did at the McMillan Center?
Yeah, so at SDSU, I was a tenure track faculty member in the finance department, but also a director of the real estate center. And the real estate center was really kind of the connection for the university out to industry. So it'd be a connection for professors, the university, but primarily students. So I came to a point and I always knew that I wanted to at least try teaching again. And the opportunity actually presented itself through a former business partner that we had done a lot of investments with, both at Henderson and at TIAA, and really thought it'd be a great opportunity. And I'd have to say the experience with the students was stellar. It is probably one of the most personally rewarding things that I've done. And I really love the interaction. And probably more importantly, and this is one of the things that the center focused on, was getting students ready for industry. And so we did things like Excel boot camps and also very involved in real estate business case competitions, the NAOP challenge. And I was interested in getting a lot of good quality students placed at great firms, both in the California and national market.
That's fantastic. Building the next generation of industry leaders. And with your career path, you've gone from a practitioner in the industry to seeing that academic side. And then after SDSU, you joined NAREIT. I don't think it's common that everybody gets to see those different perspectives. Can you speak a bit to how that variety of experience really shaped your perspective of the industry as a whole?
So if I look back at my time at both Henderson and TIAA, I really kind of held three roles. Always had a hand in strategy and research. I was a portfolio manager for a core open-end fund. And then lastly, I spend quite a bit of time visiting clients and consultants, both here and overseas, and whether we're talking about a house view or pitching a fund. And, you know, and I think just within all those that there's really been some great learning opportunities. Number one, as a researcher, that you get a result. Often it's a very specific result, but what you quickly realize is that result may not be efficient in a real estate strategy. and you had to operate a little bit more, not with crisp lines, but maybe fuzzy lines. And then ultimately as a PM, I was actually forced to eat my own cooking. So what you realize is you really appreciate that as you do your research, you have to have flexibility and it has to be a very practical strategy that has some scale. And then also when I spent time meeting with folks, it was just a great chance to hear the other side. Here we are, we're trying to cater to clients, but yet they tell you what they want. So it was a great time to kind of step into their shoes. And I think one of the most important things of those meetings ultimately is listening. If you listen, they'll tell you almost everything. And so those were all great opportunities and experiences. Hopping over to academia, I think that what that really helped me with is getting in touch with younger generations. I'd be the first to say that the academic experience is very different today than it was when I went through. And I think students expect a lot more, and they should. I mean, they're paying a tremendous amount of money to go to school. So I think that there are a lot of lessons learned there. And then ultimately, when the opportunity came up at NAREIT, I was really quite excited about it. I'm in a research and investor outreach role. So we continue to do the research, but also meet with clients and consultants. I think most importantly, it was an opportunity to expand my horizons. I had only worked in the private real estate arena up till that point, a little bit in academia, and this really lets me get deep involved in the public market.
That's fantastic. And I can absolutely see how being a practitioner, being an academic would prepare you very well for your current role at NAREIT. But do you think it would have been possible to do it any other way, whether it's starting as an academic going into the industry or going from an industry group into academia and then into the industry or as a practitioner?
It's a good question. And I think that I never gave it a lot of thought as to the path. It was just as opportunities came up, it was, this is interesting. And typically I've had a little bit of a motto that always looking for interesting and meaningful work. And then, you know, if you find it, you pursue it a bit. But the one thing I'd say is on the academic side, maybe I could have pushed that to a little later in life. Certainly not today, but maybe at some point on the horizon that I may revisit that.
Ed, I really have to empathize with you a little bit. I actually started off in engineering and made my way into CRE as well. So I love hearing about your background and the path you've taken there. But, you know, we've brought you here to talk about REITs. And I think for the benefit of our listeners, we'll start really general and then get fairly specific. So what is a REIT and how would they differ from other real estate investment vehicles? And then we'll go through from there.
Sure. So REIT is a real estate investment trust created in 1960. And actually, the idea was to give investors access to real estate. Traditionally, real estate was really the realm of institutional investors or wealthy individuals, and REITs really gave a chance for smaller investors to participate. But REITs own real estate, or they make or own mortgages. Ultimately, their primary income is either rents or interest payments. And so as you go down the path a little bit, what you'll find is that REITs really didn't start to flourish probably until I'd call it the early to mid 1990s. And there's a little bit of a kind of a time factor in there. So they're established in 1960. Then in 86, they were allowed to operate and manage real estate. So that made a big change. They weren't just owners. In 92 was the UPREIT structure, which really offered a chance for a lot of growth. And it was basically a vehicle that allowed a lot of investors, private investors, to contribute their properties into REITs in a tax-advantaged way. And I think one of the nice things about that structure is that ultimately it's great for estate planning purposes because there is a step-up in basis to your heirs if everything's still left in there. And then, but REITs then continued to grow. You saw the first REIT, I think it was in 2001, enter the S&P 500, equity office properties. Since that time, we have like 29 REITs, probably about 2.5% or so of the equity market cap. And then also, as more time passed, ultimately, we saw real estate become its own GIC, so separated out from the financial sector. And so there's been a lot of change there. But I think with the growth of REITs, what we found is that there's been a lot of innovation. oftentimes when people think about real estate, they immediately think about the four traditional property types. But yet when you take a look at REITs today, 14 total sectors, 13 are in equity, and then you have mortgage REITs as well. There's been a lot of change over time. And I think with that, it's presented a lot of investment opportunity.
Excellent. I know you talk about that era of the 90s, really the birth of the modern REIT era and all that growth. Do you think you can give us some stats to how big the REIT industry is today? I know you already put a couple of numbers to it, but what does it look like now?
I think overall, if you looked at a gross asset value, you're probably at about $4 trillion. If you look at public equity REITs, their gross asset value is maybe at about $2.5 trillion. And then lastly, if you look at the equity market cap as REITs, then it probably goes down to about $1.4 billion. Very sizable and very diverse across property types or sectors.
Excellent. And so your organization, your primary focus is REITs. Do you want to tell us a little bit about when NAREIT was created and why?
Yeah. So NAREIT actually was created in 1960. So as REITs came onto the scene, so did NAREIT. NAREIT is the worldwide voice for REITs with an interest in U.S. real estate. And really, we end up doing quite a few different things. We really have kind of a policy and public affairs group, really focusing on advocacy at both the federal and state levels. We have the research and investor outreach groups, which again, not only are we publishing our own research, but we're sponsoring research, we're curating research as well. And then, you know, when we meet with investors, those could be institutional investors, it could be defined benefit plans, and even financial advisors. In addition to that, we have a lot of meetings, and we have really our major meeting of the year, REIT Week, coming up in New York, and really just a great opportunity for anyone, whether you're involved in REITs today or wanting to learn more about them, to really get a good chance. Now, it's a little bit different from your traditional conferences where there's a lot of meetings going on behind the scenes, but every company pretty much gives a 30-minute presentation. So if you have an interest in a specific company or a specific sector, really an opportunity to learn quite a bit. And then also we're involved in indices. We've partnered with FTSE and then also FTSE and EPRA to do both U.S. and global indices.
Great. I think a nice overview of NAREIT's objective. You guys do serve REITs, but I guess you've probably shifted priorities through time. Could you give us a bit of an overview about some of the topics or biggest issues for NAREIT and its membership?
So when we think about things like our research agenda, we let it come to us. It's almost a bit organic. So we are looking at questions that are out there in industry, things we hear at conferences. We're also listening to the questions we get, not only from our membership, but from investors. And so today we hear a lot about divergence. That's a hot topic. Everyone's worried about interest rates and also with kind of Fed tightening cycles. So we've explored what happens both during and when those tightening cycles end. And then we talk a lot about completion portfolios because one of the major things, or at least our kind of point of view, stems from that it is not a private or public real estate question. And really, it is public and private real estate that they should work together. And in fact, REITs could be a great complement to an existing private real estate portfolio. So we take that view. And I think that it's interesting that, especially when we talk to investors and reflecting back a little bit on my time in academia, and one of the things, particularly if you're teaching an introductory real estate course, whether it's at the undergrad or graduate level, you talk about the four quadrants of real estate. But yet in practice, when you talk to a lot of investors, real estate means private real estate. So really, when we are out there meeting with folks, we are really promoting REITs, but also saying that, hey, there's a lot of great opportunities, whether it be a tactical or a strategic investment opportunity, but it's something that you have to be ready to act on.
I think that's excellent. I couldn't agree more. I think you call that completion portfolio. I love that concept because the topic of public versus private, right? One, it's known as public versus private, and that pits them against each other. I haven't really seen that debate evolve over the years, and it gets nowhere. But how are those conversations going? If I'm allowed to ask, Do you think that we are getting to a point where, I'll just say broadly, capital and capital allocators are starting to look at real estate as the investment decision, not necessarily public versus private, or taking that two-by-two box as opposing quadrants?
You know, REITs have made a tremendous amount of headway. If you look at individual investors, about 170 million Americans live in households today that own REITs. And then when you take a look at some of the institutional investors, through a variety of metrics, you come up with the same number. But among the largest investors in the States, 65% of them have a REIT allocation. But yet, you know, we talk to a lot of folks and some don't do any REITs. Some can do REITs, but don't. Some can do REITs and do. So we really spend a lot of time talking about opportunities, but also through time, we've cultivated quite a few case studies, which shows ways that people have said, hey, look, we looked at our portfolio and we decided to do a completion portfolio. You see really dramatic changes in diversification. We've had groups that have looked at the current divergence between the public and private markets and said, this is an opportunity, and invested in it. We have a case study that we share a lot. And in fact, a little bit of a hint of things to come, upcoming article in the Pria Quarterly is written by a group who did just that. And the article is, I think, a great article because it really goes through their whole process of not only identifying the opportunity, stepping through the administration internally that they had with the plan, making the investments, harvesting the investments, and then actually sharing an end result. So it's almost like a little bit of a recipe to say that if you want to do some tactical investments, this may be a way out.
That's fantastic. Do you think that we'll be seeing a wave of, I would say, the big pools of capital that are a little bit more rigid? Are they going to be updating their IPSs or their investment policy statements to be a little bit more inclusive?
We hope so. That's certainly what we're trying to do. The way I look at it is when some of these opportunities arise, if you're not participating really across all the quadrants, it's a missed opportunity. And then also to the extent you don't have an allocation, it's effectively a bet against something. And that may not be necessarily what someone wants.
That makes sense. And so shifting to the research that you currently do, can you share with the listeners a little bit about what you're looking at? You're not doing sell side, buy, sell, hold decisions on any single entity. What are some of the metrics you're looking at and ultimately, I would say, questions that you're trying to answer?
We're interested in the real estate market. We're interested in the private market. We're interested in the public market. And overall, we look at the same stuff that everyone looks at. There's your traditional tools out there, the CoStars and all that sort of stuff. But we have some as well that we've developed in-house, and we call it our T-Tracker. And it's free. We're currently in the middle of preparing the first quarter of this year. And we have a little bit of a delay there because we have to wait for earnings to come out in order to populate everything. But typically, once they're done, we'll have it up within, I'd say, about 4 business days. So probably about mid-May, we'll release that. But it's just a wealth of information focusing on REIT operating metrics. So you could look at things like FFO, NOI, same store NOI, occupancy rates, dividends. Also takes a look at REIT balance sheets. And we can look at leverage ratios, weighted average term to maturity, weighted average cost of debt, how much fixed rate debt, how much unsecured debt. And so it's really just kind of another piece. So even as we go out and we talk to folks, and if they're not interested in REITs, we say, look, we have some information that you might like to look at because this really can help give some additional insight into the broader real estate market.
Yep. From experience, and I've been a consumer of the T-Tracker for many years, huge fan. If people aren't aware of this, it is an incredibly valuable resource. So I thank you and your team for making that available. Shifting to a little bit more around what you're currently seeing, what are some of the trends that you think are really affecting REITs broadly today?
If we take a look at REITs and maybe even just stepping through some of the T-Tracker materials, you know, what we see operationally, I think things are generally still solid, particularly as we look at year-over-year changes. But certainly, when you go quarter to quarter, you start to see some cracks. We see some negative rates change. Now, quarter to quarter, it's not always ideal because sometimes there's some seasonality in the data. But overall, what we see is that we're still seeing generally positive rates of growth, FFO, same-store NOI. But if you start to look at the trending on that through time, it's been moderating or tempering. And although the numbers look good, and I would say you could argue that REITs have kept pace with inflation, we see this fall off. But when you dig into the fundamentals, the real demand and supply out there, and you see some of the weakness there, there really should be no surprise in this. And then also in terms of balance sheets have gotten critically important. We had a surge in the 10-year Treasury yield in 2022. And if you're refinancing, it was a real tough time. Not only did the rate increase, but a lot of other expenses often related to variable rate did as well, like any sort of interest rate cap and things like that. But what we see overall is that REITs, I think, learned some lessons from the GFC, and leverage ratio as of the end of fourth quarter was about 33%. I would argue that that's maybe akin to a private, maybe core plus strategy. But when we take a look at the length of the debt or the weighted average term to maturity, over 6 years, and the cost of that debt had increased with the rise in rates, but still relatively low at about 4.1%. But I think the composition of the debt is really pretty telling. On the one hand, you have REITs are big users of fixed rate debt. On average, over 90% of total debt is fixed rate. And I think that's very much consistent with their long-term investment strategies. But the other piece is unsecured debt. So this is debt at the corporate level. And we see that REITs are almost at about 80% there. And I think that this is probably a competitive advantage for REITs in the sense that they have the ability to access the debt markets. Even in 2022, when rates were going up, they still had the ability to access the markets, so the kitchen wasn't closed. But ultimately, we think that this, in addition to the ability to raise equity, puts them in a real good spot in terms of maybe future acquisitions growth.
And wearing your, whether it's PM hat, your researcher hat, your academic hat, and just using all of your experience, how do you read the current environment? I know that you just did an excellent breakdown of kind of the income statement as well as the balance sheet of the REITs in aggregate, but how do you interpret what's happening, whether it's in rates, whether it's in migration, just like that macro environment? Do you have a perspective on, everybody likes using what inning we're in, or I was hearing a lot of survive till 25, right? But both of those are pretty, those can be negative. Do you have any perspective on adding some color to how you're interpreting the broader environment?
So when we really take a look at things, a few of the lenses we can use is really kind of one, this divergence concept. And another one could be what happens both to real estate and REITs after a tightening cycle ends. But the divergence really is, you know, you look through time and there's instances where valuations between public and private markets diverge, right? They split. And at these times, REITs tend to underperform and underperform fairly significantly. And, you know, on the one hand, no one likes underperformance, but oftentimes these are perhaps a bit of a signal or a harbinger, a pop in performance. We really saw the last major and actually, in fact, the most significant divergence was in the third quarter of 2022. And we would anticipate that we would have a little bit of a pop there. But in fact, we see that it's been a longer dragged out kind of recovery, so to speak. And that's actually interesting because the next most severe divergence would have been back at the GFC. And that corrected itself at about four quarters. So we're extended a little bit. But when we take a look at the Fed tightening policy, that effectively ended in the third quarter of last year. Fourth quarter, we saw the pop in REITs, and then there was a lot of promise as the year began, but then suddenly the talked about delayed potential cuts. And then further, we've had some indications that some members of the Fed also might think that there may be fewer cuts. So when we take a look at really REIT performance dating from the beginning of 2022 to now, and you can really map out an interesting relationship with the 10-year Treasury yield. And effectively, through the lion's share of that time, you saw a huge increase in the yield. With that, you saw a negative performance for REITs. But then as we saw a decrease in the yield, we saw the pop in performance in REITs. And then now as we've seen the increase in the yield again, it's gone back to that negative performance. And as we look out, one of the things we would say is that this kind of recovery for REITs doesn't necessarily have to be linear. So we're not drawing a straight upward sloping line, but you know, it can move around a bit. The one thing that makes us believe that there's still fuel in the tank, so to speak, is that when we look at the delta cap rates between the public and private markets, it's still a pretty wide gap and probably sits at about 120 basis points. So we do think that there's going to be some outperformance for REITs really in 2024.
Ed, you've already covered this from a couple different angles, but I really enjoyed your piece published through Nareit's website about why you think that REITs are poised to be fairly resilient despite these delayed rate cuts. And you talk a little bit about debt trends and the favorable maturity schedule and such, but are there any other reasons you think that might be?
I think that REITs are really well positioned. I think with a lot of instances, not only do they have a lot of scale, they are typically best-in-class operators within their segment. And they're in great shape. Right now, there's still a pretty wide bid-ask spread. But as opportunities arise, REITs are certainly in a great position to access them.
Great. And, you know, I know we're in the midst of those Q1 earnings calls. And so I know you're waiting to get through them so that you can populate all the data in the T-tracker. And I know Omar and I are patiently awaiting that, too. But they're not all over. This week, there's quite a few calls. And I know that you don't follow individual REITs, but you do follow the sector. What are some things you're looking out for, maybe themes from those calls or things that you're looking for the next few weeks?
So, you know, with T-Tracker, you're right. We're at about 50% today. So we're about halfway. We still got a long way to go. And as you mentioned, we don't really comment on individual securities. And even on the sectors, oftentimes we're hesitant to do that. But we have developed a tool that we've been utilizing really for the last few quarters. And it's our active manager tracker. And effectively, it looks at 27 active REIT investors. So these are active managers. And they really do provide some kind of interesting insights, because from this, you could see what the managers are thinking. And then so on the one hand, you see where they're potentially overweight a particular sector, but then also underweight a sector. And then we can even track the changes in a sector quarter to quarter and year to year. So you could see it's a little bit backward looking. It's maybe not exactly what's happening today, but definitely a great place to take a look and see where active managers are placing their bets.
And you talk a little bit about those managers, but I know you have some conversations with investors, other industry stakeholders. If you could speak to some general things they might be looking for as opposed to you guys internally, what do you think is the big thing that they're looking for in quarter one's earnings?
You know, as we lay out the case for REITs, they're interested. And even as we lay this out, I think oftentimes the question is, whether or not they could maybe execute a strategy in a timely fashion. I think, again, the thoughts are fairly consistent with what we see on the broad data, that we still see really across real estate, public and private, operations still look pretty good. They're solid, but there are some cracks and there is some weakening. We're starting to see a little bit of that, maybe starting to flow through in some occupancy rates as well. But also, I think that there is an overview that there is opportunity on both sides, and investors are waiting to see the right pricing, so to speak, for those opportunities.
Looking forward, are there any emerging trends that you're really honing in on, or if you can elaborate on any of those opportunities that you mentioned that really are catching your attention?
Just in terms of emerging trends, I think we view that there's still going to be quite a bit of a REIT growth. I think that there's going to be still quite a bit of innovation. We mentioned with the sectors, and oftentimes you have some right in front of you and you don't realize it's going to become a sector, but gaming came out, effectively triple net play for casinos and entertainment properties as the tenants. And that came out in the second quarter of 2023. So we're certain that there'll be more there. I think that REITs will also continue to grow by acquisition. I think if you take a look at a lot of the acquisitions over the last several years, the majority have been REIT to REIT. So again, stressing the importance of the scale of the business, having a large presence. There's no doubt that prop tech is going to influence a lot. What that exactly is going to entail, that's unfolding today. I think it's a tremendously exciting time for real estate.
Do you see any other either innovation, whether that's on the structuring side? So would UPREITs come back, or is there another? Is there any other structuring that you think could boost the REIT industry as a whole? This similarly how the UPREITs did in the past, or do you see all the growth as being the same players just getting bigger?
I think there's the same players. I think ultimately there'll be new players as well. And there's growth there. In terms of the structuring, it's not my expertise. So I can't go too deep into that. But then REITs overall, even with the private REITs, the non-listed REITs, they've grown in a big way and attracted a lot of interest.
And then looking out even further, how do you see the industry changing in, say, the next 3 to 5 years?
You know, with real estate overall, I think the one thing is the cyclicality of it. And, you know, there's good times and there's bad times. And we don't really do forecasts too far out on the horizon. But, you know, the one thing that you can see, you just plot the return data, plot occupancy rates. The cyclicality is theirs. And I think not everyone has experienced bad times. So we'll see what the next 3 to 5 years hold.
And I think that's a great jumping off point for some of our final questions here. You know, this is an interesting time, to say the least, to get started out in this industry. So we have some listeners that are probably pretty early in their careers. Do you have any recommendations for them going forward?
Absolutely. So for anyone, whether you're a student who's graduating or early career, I would say get involved. Get involved in organizations and more so than just membership. I take a look at my time at SDSU and the students who really succeeded. They were involved in the real estate club. They were involved in our NAOP challenge. And also early on started the networking. If you're starting out, I think virtually anyone will take your call and give you 10 minutes to either talk about potential opportunities or career path. And that's one of the things that I've always tried to make available to all the students that I've come across.
So another great segue into my next question. You mentioned REIT Week is coming up, but are there any other resources or events that you'd like to make our listeners aware of that would be great to know about?
Yeah, for us, that's really the big one on the horizon. So it's early June. And again, I think that if you are a REIT investor, a great place to be. If you are curious about REITs, great place to learn. And I went to my first one last year. And I have to say, they're just like short 30-minute sessions. You get a chance to go in, you learn a little bit about a company, a business, their management. And the beauty is you know a little bit more, but also it raises a lot more questions. And folks are accessible. You know, you can ask those questions.
I guess the listeners who are interested, they can sign up on NAREIT, correct? We can put a link in the show notes, right?
Yeah, that's great. Just reach out and we'll get you in touch with the right folks.
Fantastic. Ed, we have one question that we ask all of our guests, and that is, if you could snap your fingers and have a big change come to the industry, what would that be?
Pretty easy answer. I would ask investors to invest more in REITs.
Excellent. I figured that answer was coming. But Ed, it's been great to have you here today. We want to thank you for joining us and giving us some great insights on NAREIT and your career and the REIT industry or CRE industry at large. We really appreciate it. But Omar, I think that is all the time we've got today. And I look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.